So for many, the pandemic is over. Time for summer camp, vacations. Many of us will still wear masks, but we're stepping out. There are also millions of Americans still grieving those who died and are still dying of COVID-19. And what about the people who tried to save them? Over the last year, Maryland psychotherapist Carrie Maloista noticed frontline healthcare workers struggling with what she called the ghosts of the COVID deaths they carry, borrowing the expression from Tim O'Brien's exquisite collection of Vietnam War-era stories, The Things They Carried. Well, to help healthcare workers in this present-day frontline, and inspired by two paintings that we'll post at herenow.org, Carrie started the Things They Carry Project, a series of writing workshops for healthcare workers and first responders, each session guided by a known writer and a therapist who, together, help doctors, nurses, hospital, domestic workers understand it's okay to lay down their burdening thoughts. Carrie Maloista, welcome.
Thank you.
And Michael Schmitz is here as well. He's an emergency doctor practicing in Biddeford, Maine. He's been participating in the workshops. Dr. Schmitz, Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
And Carrie, what were you hearing?
I had a couple patients who were, you know, working in the front lines, one an ICU worker, another an ER doc. And it was at the year anniversary of the pandemic in March that the grief really was starting to hit them. It was like things were finally slowing down, and I was hearing just the pain they were feeling. And it was with one doc that I said, you know, what about just trying to write down these feelings and express them? Because he found he had no words for them. And when he came back in and told me how helpful it was, and he was continuing to write, it just immediately took off as an idea of what about if we offered this.
And Dr. Schmitz, Mike, how were you feeling about expressing emotions when, you know, a doctor has to be so strong for the patients?
Especially in the emergency department, the public sort of has a stereotype of, you know, that you sort of run in and maybe do things and maybe don't feel them or don't carry them with you. And of course, the opposite is very much true. All those experiences are still with you.
Well, a lot of people died this past year. What was it that you were carrying?
How wearing PPE and gowns and masks, while they were necessary, they also disrupted a lot of the things about the way I'm used to communicating with other people, especially meeting someone for the first time. You know, the face is so expressive. That's how we connect. And to have half of your face covered certainly makes it more challenging. You know, outside of that, there's, you know, everyone has a family to take care of and kids who have to adapt to school. You throw in Facebook and social media and all the commentary, and it can be a lot.
What do you mean, Facebook?
People commenting about COVID and is it real and that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, meantime, what were you seeing?
First and foremost was elderly patients quite sick, couldn't communicate with their family members because of the COVID restrictions. And again and again and again. You know, one of the things that I remember that was the most difficult was working on Christmas and calling people's families. You're away from your own family. You are helping people, which is your job, but also giving people some of the worst news on Christmas that their loved one who they can't see is in the hospital and probably has COVID. Those phone calls were tough.
Yeah. What is it that you felt you were carrying?
Just a weight of those experiences. The best word I would use is just a weight. I wouldn't call it grief. In my particular case, I would just say that it was a weight. And this program made a space to put it down.
Carrie, Dr. Maloista, we should mention you know a thing or two about carrying a weight. Your daughter, Sarah, died at 18. She was an artist before that was even conceivable that she would pass. And you looked at a painting with her, Millais the Gleaners, Women Harvesting Wheat. And you've said that she taught you about, in painting, the foreground, the background, and something called the middle ground. I'm so sorry. Inconceivable. Loss of a child. Inconceivable. But can you explain how you were able to, you know, work your way out of that through this idea of finding that middle distance.
There was a Georgia O'Keeffe painting called The Far Away Nearby. It's a painting of this massive elk skull and antlers, very right up in your face, large. And then in the background is this distant mountains. And seeing it, you're off kilter. It was missing what's called the middle distance. And I had learned that term from my daughter because she was showing me the picture of the gleaners and explaining the term to me. She said it's what gives a painting balance and perspective. And it was something about those words, the far away nearby. It just struck me that we do need a middle distance in life too. And that when we go through something traumatic, at first we're in the nearby of all we feel is grief and overwhelming trauma, and we can't see past it. And then we have the idea of the far away, where we feel so distant and deny the affect and feel lost, which is also not a good place. And so I came to think how we really need a middle distance to bridge those two worlds in order to go on and live a good, full, and creative life. One that both includes the loss and the grief, we can't get rid of that completely, but also can see a distance where we might be okay and carry, you know, the loved one with us. For me, one way was writing, and I learned personally how healing that was, and then I thought I could put that to use in this project.
We'll post pictures of both Millay's work and Georgia O'Keeffe's work, and in Millay's piece, the middle distance is haystacks, and I'll never look at them the same way again, you know? But Mike, does that make any sense to you?
Absolutely. I think there's a way in, can you shift between the up close, the middle distance, and the far away so that you can do what you need to do when you're taking care of a patient, but then you also process or address the feelings and things that come afterwards.
Yeah. And Dr. Schmitz, I'm wondering, do you have any of your writing there?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I wrote something about the mask, a green mask that we have to wear, the N95 mask, about how it's thick with microfilaments and cupping my nose and mouth, not quite smothering, but hopefully protecting, muffling not just my words, but the timing, the cadence of my speech, my patience, and my smile. The conscious work of breathing to now get the words out, counteracted only by my gloved hand resting upon a naked forearm, in a meager attempt to make up the chasm in the boundaries of our communication, trying to say, I've got you, and it's going to be okay.
Oh, wow. No, that gave me chills.
Thank you.
Ooh, what did that do for you to be able to write that?
There was definitely a release, and the thing that was the most helpful was that other people also talked about how these boundaries around COVID, whether it was a computer screen because they were doing mental health support for people or wearing PPE, how that affected their ability to care for other people. And they had many of the same fears and frustrations.
And what's been so interesting, too, is the range of, you know, a firefighter with a man who was doing burials with a doctor, all sharing their own grief. And I think at first people are numb, sort of like soldiers. You're going through one foot in front of the other and you have no option. And then suddenly, like I saw in March, when you can slow down, that's when you start to feel.
Yeah. And Mike, of course, you know, there were times when you could say, I got you, and it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. But it's not. Yeah. You know, what do you want people to say to you as we're all, you're up in Biddeford, Maine. You're about to have an invasion of tourists. What do you want people to say to you?
The most powerful thing that people have said is just thank you. Those are the words that go in the little bank that you hold in the center of your chest and that get you through the more difficult times.
Thank you, Dr. Michael Schmitz, an emergency physician there in Biddeford, Maine. Thank you so much.
Happy to be here. Thank you for your time.
And Dr. Carrie Malawista, who launched the project. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Raman.
I just wanted to express my thanks. I think I can speak for the group of people that I was with that, you know, the benefit of this is you are connecting with other people, regardless of their degrees or specialty, who are like you in that they're willing to be accountable to each other. They're willing to confront the difficult feelings. And most importantly, as overwhelming as COVID and the pandemic have been, they're focused on serving others. Dr. Melista, I'm so grateful for your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, to find out more about the Things They Carry project or to sign up for a session, go to hearnow.org, where you'll also find writing samples and those inspirational paintings.